Hey everyone, it's me, Kyrie. I'm here at the top of the episode this time. You're listening to the season 2 finale of Ultimate Despair Reprise, and I just wanted to get my thoughts out and give you some updates, but hey, first, let's get through the shoutouts. This show is hosted on Scanline Media. Head on over to scanlinemedia.com for more great podcasts and articles. We have shows like Mechanisa and G, The Garnet Wager, and a Johto Quorum spinoff called The Hunter's Quorum, a show ranking the monsters in Monster Hunter. Hey, you like that Monster Hunter Rise, don't you? You should check that out. All these shows and more are free on scanlinemedia.com. And if you would like to support us directly, you can also go to patreon.com/scanlinemedia for lots of exclusive shows. We have over 180 episodes of Oops All Anime, a spinoff of that called Oops All Manga, and a movie podcast called Iris and Audio. All those shows can only be found for $1 a month. And if you support us at $4 a month or more, you get access to exclusive actual play podcasts, including the sci-fi mecha drama Starsung Distance and a paranormal thriller The Ghosts of Parliament. If that sounds interesting to you, head on over to scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. Once again, a huge shout out to Vetron for the use of the music in the show. Head on over to youtube.com/VetronProjects, that's V-E-T-R-O-M Projects, all one word, for more great remixes. They remix from Danganronpa, Fire Emblem, and Pokemon, but also have remixes from Trauma Center and The Witcher 3. Again, that is youtube.com/VetronProjects. And lastly, thank you for listening. It has been a long road to get to this point, and I am just ever so thankful for you sticking around with us on this journey. I cannot describe how blown away I am by the response to this show, and I can't thank you enough for listening. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Some light housekeeping. The RSS feed for the show should be less of a mess now, so make sure to refresh your podcast feed so you have the most up-to-date titles and season info. And pretty soon, we should be on iTunes, so to keep your eye on that, and for all the up-to-date information, make sure you're following at YouDespairCast on Twitter. And if you'd like to send us an email, send us to despaircast@gmail.com to have your questions, comments, and everything else answered. So that's it for me from now. Again, thank you so much for listening to the show and sharing it with others. It means so much to us here that you're listening and coming along for the ride. I hope you enjoy the season 2 finale of Ultimate Despair Reprise.
All right, welcome back.
Welcome back.
This is actually the finale to season 2 of Ultimate Despair Reprise. What the hell?
Yeah, we're here.
Two seasons, 200 followers?
Yeah, 200 followers. That was like super hype.
Yeah, no, everything's coming up DespairCast.
Yeah, because you're listening to Ultimate Despair Reprise, a Danganronpa recap podcast going through the entire Danganronpa series one murder at a time. I'm your ultimate host, Kyrie.
I'm your ultimate fangirl, Jennifer.
I'm Jackie. I'm not really ultimate anything. I'm more of a reserve course student, but I solved the murder nonetheless.
You solved every murder.
I have solved every murder
on this Jabberwock Island that we call life.
In a general sense, like I've caught every murderer.
Yeah,
That's why they don't do murders anymore. I caught them all.
Yeah. And today, like I said, this is the finale. We are covering Chapter 0, Chapter 6, and the epilogue of Super Danganronpa 2: Goodbye Despair.
And we hope you did your homework, because
holy shit,
there's a lot that happened.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't do your homework, I recommend you do it like now before continuing, pace yourself, because that was 4 fucking hours for me at least.
Yeah, it was really long. I was recovering from having the vaccine and I was playing through this final stretch, and oh boy, you feel its length.
I was just sleepy when I was doing it. I was like a little hungover and I was doing it. I was just About halfway through, I'm like, okay, we're over now, right? We're like basically done with this, right? And like three quarters then, I was like, okay, we gotta be done, right? And then when I hit the 4 hour mark, I was reasonably sure the game was gonna go on for another 6 hours. Like, it wasn't a bad ending, but it was fucking interminable.
Yeah.
Thing I've been thinking about. Technically, we've been going through the Danganronpa series on average 1.3 repeating murders at a time. Given how many double murders we've had in the game so far,
that is true. The averages kind of work out to be that number.
You're gonna have to change your tagline, Kiri.
Damn it! Well, we're gonna go through the entire Danganronpa series 1.33333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333 Yeah.
So
we start
yeah.
with chapter zero that shows up, and the creaking on the boat nearly drove me to wanting to throw my computer out a window.
Oh, yeah, I was, so I actually have a VOD of the whole, finale on Twitch. My Twitch handle is Your Lizard Friend. That's just one word. And I was kind of watching, I was kind of playing through it with a lot of the members of our Discord server. And I think a thing that I was talking with Tara about it was that
friend
it's like a
show.
Friend of the show. 5 second loop, I think, of the creaking and the waves just all together, and it repeated every 5 seconds. So it went from like, okay, this is a thing, to like really obnoxious really quickly.
Mm-hmm. But we're on this boat and we have Nagito and a mysterious figure.
Talking about how boring everything
aren't
is.
Aren't we the mysterious figure?
Yeah, we're the mysterious figure.
We're the mysterious figure. It was us all along.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We were the mysterious Hero X.
Yeah.
Jen,
I think, had something to say, but I kept cutting her off.
I was just saying, you're just talking about how... the character in the game is just talking about how everything's boring him. Like, being stuck in a room with Komaeda is boring him.
I do like he basically tells Komaeda, like, fuck off, peon. Like, which really rocks, because I think that's what Komaeda deserves above all else. He truly, little rat man deserves to get told to go to hell. But I think aside from that, so we get a little bit of a perspective. This character is relevant later in. His name is Isuru Kamakura.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the ultimate hope. Is he the ultimate hope?
Yeah, he's designated.
His talent is being talented.
Yeah, he's designated as the ultimate hope because we learn at some point in this chapter that Hajime subjected himself to basically brain experiments by Hope Speak Academy to become the ultimate talented student. Because.
Yeah. Like. I think the implication more than the actual, like the vibe I was getting off of it was that he and a bunch of other students, he was picked because he was the most, he believed the most in Hope Speak. And then all of the other, reserve course students ritualistically killed themselves to give birth to Isuru Kamakura within Hajime,
mm-hmm.
which is a fucking metal concept. I love that shit. But I think I actually really like that bit.
Yeah. Like the Isuru.
And I like,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry. And I like how like Isuru is miserable. Like he is in Danganronpa's, not really explicitly stated, but in the show's like, villains' ideologies, essentially, or in the world of the show, he is the perfect human. He is the, like...
He's the ultimate of ultimates.
He's the ultimate of ultimates. He is, you know, everybody... He is luckier than Komaeda, and probably better at whatever everybody else does than they are,
mm-hmm.
which is a cool concept. I like that a lot, and he is just an utter sad sack. He's bored and he's also boring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's boring and he finds everything else boring. So
yeah, he is an endless font of misery.
Right. I think we'll get into the Izuru.
Yeah, stuff. We will talk about that later, but I really liked him.
Mm.
Like I think Izuru I have very strong opinions on him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is a fantastic character to depict in a series that seems very fixated on these talents. And he is kind of a missing puzzle piece for Danganronpa, ideologically. I think Danganronpa is not the most elegant when it comes to ideology. I talk about it a little in the VOD where it begins getting on my nerves how Danganronpa doesn't really engage with anything on a higher level than, you know, it's really pared down interpretation of hope and despair.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for all intents and purposes, Junko and Izuru are nihilists.
Right.
And their interpretation of nihilism is nothing matters, so I have ultimate freedom. Because I, like, it's the Nietzschean Ubermensch type thing, but taken at totally face value, not as like an observation on a flawed society, but as an observation on an ideal society for these characters. They are better than everybody else, so they can act as they please.
Right.
But the game doesn't really, like, the game kind of doesn't care about that.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't really think about, you know, this is how these people view the world so much as it thinks about, like, they just really like despair.
Yeah.
They just really like this idea of making people hopeless.
Sure.
Which they don't really
anyway.
It gets a little lost in its own weed. Happy 420, everybody!
it's May 9th by the time we're recording this, by the way.
Yep.
It is literally May 9th.
Yeah.
May the 9th be with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me it's a situation
Come
where
hit this, Komeda.
It's a situation where it's not so much the focus that these are two nihilists who have ultimate power and they can do whatever they want. It's the systems that allow them to operate in that function. Like, Hope's Peak, as it's discussed within this chapter, is a really horrible school that is basically a perfect example for for-profit schooling, just in terms of, like, okay, other students, charge them through the roof in order to give them a prestigious education, basically buying them social access into the world, and more or less putting them in a situation where they're desperate enough.
That is mostly, I'm gonna be honest, that is mostly paratext. Like, that is the text of the work, yes, but, like, it is also not a focus of the work. Like, Danganronpa will put that concept out there, and then it will move on to be fixated by this kind of nonsensical dichotomy of hope and despair. Hope's Peak, but I do like Hope's Peak is objectively a terrible place. It is a vampire. For-profit education is disgusting, and it does bleed not only the students but their parents dry of everything. And Hope's Peak is a parody of such, and it does literally kill them, in the same way that, like, you know, the school system, and especially a high pressure school system where, you know, your well-being in the future is very explicitly on the line, would kill your enthusiasm for learning and your enthusiasm for self-growth. But that doesn't seem to be a thing that the game particularly cares about.
I think a lot of it is, like, I think that one of the issues, like, with this particular last set of chapters is how many concepts they're trying to introduce at the same time that they didn't necessarily seed properly. Like,
oh yeah.
Now, on one hand, I really like the Azuru Kamakura stuff. I really like I think they really it really helps define and make the character of Hajime Hinata like that much more interesting. But I wish that we were talking about this, how in the previous game we had the Mukuro Ikasaba subplot and the, you know, secret 16th student, and how that was like seeded throughout the text before we got the big reveal, right? And it is unfortunate that the Azuru Kamakura stuff, like, you get one hint of it in chapter 4, and that's just because there is a picture that you can miss of Azuru Kamakura, and that is the first time that they mention the name, but nothing about, like, you know, the Hope Restoration Project or the fact that, you know, Hope's Peak is doing experiments on students, that kind of thing.
I'd say that they layer some of that in, like, for example, you being the only one who can't remember why you're even there in the first place, the reveal about the Reserve Corps stuff, the fact that the few memories you have of the Reserve Corps are clearly so traumatic that they're buried deep within, like, they're clearly hinting that he's seen some shit, but yeah, it's, to the degree, isn't exactly shown as much until this chapter.
I don't think that is particularly well illustrated at all, really. I think that Izuru Kamakura kind of comes out of nowhere. And he's cool. He rips the entire idea. He is evidence of the system's inhumanity. And he's also a fantastic antagonist in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because he is literally Hajime Hinata. And he's the true Hajime Hinata, not the... you know, not the one from 4 years prior.
Right.
Means that, like, Hinata has already willfully handed himself over, and died so that Kamakura may live. But the Kamakura shows up out of fucking nowhere.
Right.
He does, like, he is referenced in chapter 4, very obliquely. Like, he technically, I would say that is an Easter egg for people who have already played through the game and are giving it a second run.
Yep. Like, I noticed it because it was my second run, and it was like, oh right, this character that won't show up till the end.
He shows up in chapter 0. He doesn't get a name or an introduction, and he just talks about how boring things are. He puts Komeda in his place. And then we don't see him until the actual, like, towards the end of the finale, where we kind of get the lowdown on him. And the lowdown is actually good, but by that point, again, it's too little too late, and this is the Danganronpa 2 story. And, fuck, like, he's good. He's good, too, is the thing. Like, he is a good antagonist. He is the, like, allure of being just instantly good at something. If you've ever felt bad about, like, not being gifted or not being gifted enough, you know, then you can empathize with Hinata, who wants to be good at something and sees himself constantly outclassed and turns to becoming inhuman. Right. You know, giving up the joy of actually doing things in order to become good at them. He gives way to just this utter sad sack of a guy who is just so miserable. He's allowed his to fester into cruelty.
Yeah.
Like,
it is, so near the end of this chapter, we're jumping around, but that's okay. That's what we do. Oh, yeah, no,
that's... This is more, I think this is more of, like, a review of what's going on than, like, a recap. Like, this isn't really I think we, lately, especially with, like, the latter part of Danganronpa 2, we as a podcast have been shifting more into review than recap, which I think has been overall good.
Yeah.
I think that's been I think that is more in line with, like, what... I'm not going to say that's more in line with what people want out of us, but I feel more confident in this as, like, a podcast.
Right.
When we talk about, like, hop around and talk about things that evoked emotion,
mm-hmm.
rather than just, like,
rather than just straight recap of what you saw. And the thing that evoked emotion for me is, like, the thing that makes this chapter work for me is there's mechanical moments and, like, the moments in the story as well, where at one point, you are in a trial ground of nothing but Izuru Kamakura's saying these, like, horrible things, right? And you, at the first pass of it, cannot fight back against it. Because, like, your only, like, truth bullet is Nihil, right? And eventually...
Oh, fuck, I just got that. That's... The game literally says he's a nihilist.
Yes, yes. It is textually clear that he's a nihilist. And that is your only option, because there's a moment beforehand in which... So
Hajime gets told he's terminal.
Right.
I think it's a pretty solid, like, comparison, actually, to, like, Hajime is being told, if all of your friends wake up, not only are you not going to wake up, this contemptible motherfucker will wake up instead. Instead of you, and also he hates your friends and is willing to kill them.
Mm-hmm. Like, it is an utterly, like, it's a difficult situation.
It's miserable.
Yeah, it's miserable for Hajime. And the thing that gets him through it is... So Chiaki makes a reappearance in this chapter and basically reminds him of, like, there is a couple lines that speak to me, which is, like, if you don't like the future, Hajime, you gotta take charge of it. Like, you know, you have to have, like, this willingness to look at the future in the eye and say, like, I don't like these options, so I'm going to change it.
I thought it was a little hokey, but I think overall the sequence, it hits. It hits really well. It's very good.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic payoff for Chiaki.
Yeah.
I also think that, like, Chiaki's talent is the least impressive of the bunch.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, like, you think about her peers, she's the ultimate gamer, but she has, like, the ultimate coach like, Nekomaru was the ultimate coach. Yeah, she was the shit guy, but, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, Jen talked about it, that, like, his big redeeming thing was that he was able to see your strong points and embellish upon them and make you better. No matter what he was making you better at.
Mm-hmm.
We had, like, the ultimate mechanic. He fucking fixed an elevator that got sabotaged by God.
Yeah.
We had a dude, and there's a dude in the group who fucking Komaeda played Russian roulette with five bullets loaded in the chamber, and because he's the ultimate lucky student, not only did he survive, but in another scenario where he wanted to die, he died instead. What are the fucking odds?
Astronomical.
And Chiaki's just really good at gaming,
right?
And I think that's the like, her kinship is with Hajime kind of is in that, and it really felt like they had an actual bond,
right,
in this sequence, and it was a fantastic payoff for that.
Like,
and they find their joy outside of their, and as a result, they find their joy outside of their talent.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, with each other, with their companions. I mean, Chiaki likes video games, but in addition to that, she likes her friends. She likes, you know, she has, I mean, she does shit. She likes exploring. She liked exploring the world with Hajime. Like, that was a thing that, like, very obviously she was enjoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she said, you know, and one of the things she says is, like, you know, like I said, she has this love for her friends, and it, especially, like, you know, there is this kinship with Hajime as well. One line that, again, spoke to me was when Chiaki says, like, you're probably just scared, right? And it was like, that's a very, like, she is connecting with Hajime on a very human level of just...
On another episode, we said that she was the most emotionally intelligent member of the cast, and she is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, she...
Which makes her being a machine even funnier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A machine, as we find out early in the chapter, designed by Alter Ego.
That's right, because we do get... there is a... So one thing that's, like, really cool about this chapter that just works So after you enter the ruin and it is the time for the game to start, like, revealing secrets about the world and the world state, you actually walk around in the Danganronpa 1 environments. They're glitchy, fucked up versions of those environments, but they are unmistakably the Danganronpa 1 environments. And we were talking, Jackie, about, like, the use of space in video games and how they are very effective at evoking certain emotions when you are brought back to a space that you have already spent so much time in. And it was really cool to re-explore the old Hope's Peak, but also have it, like, there's moments in which it's inverted, in which there's nothing but wireframe. Like, it is a really genuinely cool use of, like, video game as a medium to depict this emotion, you know?
Yeah, it was fantastic navigating the guts of the digitally rotting school.
I have in my notes the 8-bit version of Kill Command is fucking sick.
Oh yeah, it's good. This chapter used sound very good as well. I think on top of Ascent, it evokes essentially a grim parody of Hope's Peak, which I really like. Is that, like, not only is this, it's very much a case of, like, how would I put this? Because it is this, like, grim parody, because it is this,
it's this rotting corpse of a school.
It's the corpse of a simulation. You are essentially supposed to be you were essentially promised, it kind of relates, I think, to the central thesis of Danganronpa, that school sucks because it is commercialized, and it is an area wherein they give you, like, you know, they kind of just make they kind of beat the shit out of kids. You find out that you were essentially promised an area to decompress and kind of live a better life and interact with people normally, and then you had that ripped from you. So when you go into Hope's Peak and you see it rotting and you find this out simultaneously, it is this, like, it just reinforces this central thesis of, like, you are kind of experiencing from a third person perspective, you know, your hopes getting crushed.
Mm-hmm.
going through fantasy high school, which, as somebody who had a miserable fucking time in high school, I agree. This is exactly what it was. This is what every day for 4 years felt like.
Especially in the American school system.
God, I can't imagine. Like, I truly don't know if the American school system is the worst in the world, but it's trying very hard at it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. Like, it's very important that this series takes place within a high school, you know, because, you know, God, I'm just remembering, what was our first ever tweet? Mom says it's my turn to be a metaphor for,
Mom says it's my turn to be a metaphor for structural violence.
Uh-huh.
Ball Monokuma, baby.
Ball Monokuma.
I mean, Mom did say it was our turn to be a metaphor for structural violence. Danganronpa, baby.
Mm-hmm.
That is the central thesis of this game.
So Jen, you've been hanging back a little bit. What do you think so far?
Yeah, I think it's interesting how you're getting bits and pieces. Well, you're getting a flush of information, and Monokuma is doing that on purpose so that he can easily steer you towards the direction he wants you to take in the trial itself. But I do think it's interesting how you see multiple sides of Makoto in this particular chapter, just in terms of running into that one email mentioning, hey, Makoto, what the fuck are you doing? You took these members of Ultimate Despair and you ran off with them? Don't you know that you're risking everyone else's lives? And by the time you run into the initial appearance of Makoto.
Oh yeah, fake Makoto was pretty good.
Yeah, like the things that he's saying, it's... Initially, it sounds like something that you'd say to someone when you're talking about, oh yeah, we're trying to reform you, but the more you listen to him, the darker his intentions sound until Hajime makes
fake Makoto?
Yeah.
Yeah, the fake Makoto sequence was very good. I may be in the minority here, but I think that should have been the beginning and end of it, really. I don't think that actually having the Trigger Happy Havoc cast show up was a good idea. I think they should have been outside. They should have been out of frame, maybe guiding hands, but having them actually show up, I think that was largely just there to get you in, to have you get interrupted by Makoto, which is cool in theory, but just it. I don't think it was worth tacking on an extra hour and a half to the ending. You know.
I do think they needed to have some outside party there to try and help them steer away from Junko's influence, because, surprise, Junko and Oshima, again, brought back through the power of AI.
Yeah.
That felt egregious. I think that it was kind of cool. Why do we need her here? There was enough going on where I don't think we needed to throw Junko onto it. You could have just kept, you could have had her speaking through Monokuma, and maybe it would have been pretty funny to have Monokuma doing the Junko poses and assuming her affectations.
Oh, have the voice actor, impersonate Junko.
I was talking about the sprites, but the voice actor would work as well. You don't even need the voice actor for Monokuma to be doing it. You could have the voice actor for Junko doing it if you really want. But I just don't think that actually having her show up in such a bombastic way added anything. Like, it just didn't feel substantial. It felt like... It felt self-congratulatory, even a little bit. Just not...
I think the thing is, I think Junko worked really well in the first game. Junko was a really good antagonist in Danganronpa 1. And to have her come back and basically do her same shtick is... I don't know. It's...
So...
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, so I did like the decision to bring her back, because it... It basically shows just how effective she is and sells how she could basically cause the tragedy that existed in 1 and 2, just in terms of, she's able to present a very convincing argument for being you're going to lose your current selves and you're going to go back to these uncomfortable, awful selves if you end up deciding to do what these other people are telling you. Don't you think it's unfair that they put you in this position? This really sucks, right? And I don't know, the way that she's able to give this argument, it does a very good job of, after her talking for a significant amount of time and basically turning the tables, it cuts to all of the other members in two that are surviving, and their faces are just stricken with shell shock and despair as the cast of one are being like, no, listen, you really need to listen to us. She knows what you really need to listen to us. She's done this to so many other people. Please stop.
We also get...
I don't think that moment was very evocative at all. I think the thing with it was that it was something that the game brought up within its own rules last minute, it felt. Mm. And it kind of just felt like a way to extend the ending. Thematically, I think it did pay off because it led to Hajime telling Izuru to fuck off and achieving self-actualization.
And then telling Junko to fuck off.
Yeah, and then telling Junko to fuck off. But aside from that, it didn't really... on its own, it doesn't really stand. I think, and you didn't have to have it introduced by Junko. Again, she would have been more effective as a voice off screen. And she doesn't really, I think she was a good antagonist in 1 because she was a character that you presumably met. Mm. And she existed within the cast and was like, oh, this is someone I know.
And then she's like, surprise, fucker, not only do you not know me at all, I hate you all.
Mm.
Which was kind of effective. But, like, because, like, she was a peer that was doing violence to you. With Danganronpa 2, though, she's just some rando. And she's also apparently, like I think the... Like, I liked the Junko Land CG.
That's funny. Was real funny.
It's funny. Like, Junko is a funny character. But, like, you need a really good reason to put her in. Like, you need to fit her in seamlessly, and you need to make it work. And, they didn't. She's not in there. I can see her bones. You know, like, she just reads, like, a lot of it just reads like, hey, this is a reference to the first game.
Jen, I think, has a counter-argument. Let's hear her out.
Yeah, I think the fact that she reappears is important because all the other students were members of her particular group before. So, it's like this whole thing has been... Like, this Neo World program, this attempt to basically undo the brainwashing she did to them and restore their lives. Like, she found a way back in, and she was more or less... This whole game is like a struggle to retain what's left of their former selves as their original tormentor comes back.
It's a struggle to overcome abuse.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And it's important for her to show back up because she's the one who committed that abuse.
I think specters of her are important, but Junko Enoshima is dead. I think that's something that, like, should be respected by the text. Danganronpa 2 doesn't really respect death as finality, which can be attributed in some way to, like, how memories linger longer than people do, and the impact of a person can maybe scar you for a long time. But the text doesn't do it very well. Danganronpa 2 does not handle this aspect of this aspect of people living longer than the shells that contain them. It's kind of just used that as a vector for vibrator jokes so far, and Junko Enoshima returning from the grave, as you know, as she does, was entertaining but ultimately kind of shallow.
Here's the thing: I think that the idea, like you said, the idea of people lasting longer than their mortal shells, they actually do kind of execute on this with Chiaki to a certain degree, because
yes, they do.
Because
okay, that's a good point.
Because with Chiaki, I like the fact. So when we get to the sequence in which Hajime is talking to Chiaki, and Hajime is like going through these emotions, right? The text is ambiguous as to whether or not this is actually Chiaki, like the spirit of, you know, the machine of Chiaki, or is just, you know, Hajime processing a difficult emotion by recalling the memory of his friend, right? And, I mean, I think on some way they kind of give it away a little bit when they have Chiaki react to when Hajime says thank you, but that is immaterial. What it is, though, is that the way that they have depicted Chiaki as having an impact on Hajime's life, like, that is good. And if they applied that, I think if they had applied that a little bit more to, like, you know, remnants of Junko, like, I like the idea, like, I kind of like your idea, Jackie, of having Monokuma being the voice of Junko showing back up, but not necessarily be her to represent the trauma that Junko has enacted, but also respect the fact that she is dead, you know?
You are bringing up actually one of my favorite, that my actual favorite scene in the game. I at like 3 a.m. I literally was like jotting a thing down in my notes. on it. I fucking adore the scene where Chiaki saves Hajime. The actual wording was a little milquetoast, but I like the idea of Hajime, like, conquering the desire to succumb to Izuru's, like, really self-filating, like, nihilistic genius hedonist mindset with, like, I just want to live up to what my dearest friend saw in me. And that being, like, Hajime's motivation and what pushes him forward through the darkest point in his life.
It's effective.
It's good. It's fucking rips. And it's really well done. I think Danganronpa 2 is, Danganronpa is clumsy. It's not handling these themes with high precision, you know, surgical laser writing, but it kind of toddles in certain spaces, kind of crawls so other series can walk, so potentially somebody in the near future may run, but sometimes it hits gold,
and
sometimes I
was just gonna say that you get also reflections of this when it comes down to the time when the Danganronpa 2 cast, like, makes their decision to do the Force Shutdown, and you get bits from the characters, and they have this implication that they saw similar visions to Hajime, but saw the people that were close to them. Like, Fuyuhiko says that, oh, this was the first time Pekko yelled at me, you know? This was, you know, it was very clear that Sonya saw visions of, like, Gundam, you know.
Damn, they kind of paired off the cast, like, canonically.
Yeah,
I don't know how much I like that. But that was good. Everybody kind of going through that. Also showing that Hinata is not alone in this, that people who are talented, the talented kids are kind of exactly like him. It's not like the series has ever alluded to otherwise, but kind of it assuages his concerns,
mm-hmm.
that he was uniquely deficient,
right,
within his peer group. They're all people with their own anxieties and fears and their own personal Chiakis,
right?
You know, just a tiny Chiaki on a keychain that you could take where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, like, I think that moment works well, because I think that's
if you press her little Galaga hairpin, she does a quote.
but yeah, fucking Hajime becomes Super Saiyan Hajime and says, like, the future is ours, I won't let anybody take them. Like, it's corny as all hell, but I still really like it. Like, I love it when characters dig deep and find something deep within themselves to find the strength to move on. And I think that is why, like, this ending kind of stumbles, but it still has moments of resonance, you know? Like, you know,
Do you think Junko will stay dead this time?
I have an answer. Do you want it? I'm not going to give it to you. No.
Okay, I don't want the answer, actually. As soon as that released from my lips, I'm like, oh, Kiri and Jen already played V3.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Junko definitely lives. Junko's going to show up at the beginning of V3 and be like, oh, what's up, everybody?
We do have a prequel anime to get through, so it's definitely not going to be the last time we talk about Junko.
Well, but at least in a prequel sense, like, it makes sense to have Junko because it's,
oh,
like,
yeah, no, her being prevalent in the prequel is, like, fine. I'm okay with that. I just don't like when a character dies and everybody like very openly mourns them, and then, like, they show up and they're back and it's, like, not a psychic break thing and not everybody being, like, at their absolute worst and denying the situation, but rather, no, this person is literally just back and they're fine and they're taking you all to the beach. Like,
right. Yeah. So Gosh, like,
and if you've been good, Junko Inoshima will give you ice cream. It's poisoned.
Oh no, that's it's full of despair.
It's full of despair. It's the ice cream that makes you sad when you eat it.
that's well.
This ice cream is so good. It's so good, but it makes me so sad when I eat it. I think I might have to kill someone. I think I might have to beat a car. I think I might have to hit a car, the car door, the door of a car, with a bat exactly once.
Oh.
What is this in reference to?
CG from the first game.
The CG of the first game. When did this?
Speaking of CGs, let's talk about some real winners.
Okay, the CG in which so the guy being held at gunpoint by the gray man.
That was just a trace of Harris Bomber guy. That was just Harris Bomber guy.
That CG.
I see through you, Danganronpa 2. I don't know where you got that image.
That gun looks like a fucking.
But he was saying trans rights during it.
That gun looks like a off the streets tweet. You know what I mean? Like it is the
fakest looking. It is a Pictionary gun. It is a gun that like it is a game of. They had a game of telephone or some shit in the Danganronpa Artists HQ where it's like draw a gun, draw what you think this is. You know, at some point, someone's just like it's Nerf or nothing.
Yeah.
I do like the one touch of the CG where they're going over the various things that Ultimate Despair have done without actually naming names, but just using the images to convey them. And it's very clear that, at least in Fuyuhiko's case, the eye that he lost during that one execution is the same eye they're showing as being replaced in this CG. So
I didn't even catch that. That's good. That's a good little detail.
Yeah, it is a good little detail. Let's see. There, when they show the three, the three survivors from the first game, and Kyoko's looking sharp in her suit. That's actually a good CG because
Kyoko's cool.
Yeah,
she's just cool.
Kyoko's just fucking cool.
She's just cool. Like, there is nobody. She's the like ultimate detective. Yeah, sure. Ultimate cool student, that there she is.
Yeah,
she's like an adult now, though, right? Like, she's not a student anymore.
Oh,
she
yeah.
graduated.
Yeah, these are all adults
she
now.
Does, she has to pay, she has to do her own taxes now.
These are all adults now, but Makoto just can't pull the suit off. Like, he just looks like he's going to a career fair.
Yeah, it's like, I have to dress up for church.
Makoto is... His sprite was wonky. His sprite looked
very
funky.
It was very funky to see the Danganronpa 1 sprites like juxtaposed between Danganronpa 2.
It was like, this is a different art style.
Yeah, like they found their footing with
this
2.
Guy is like from an in-universe cartoon. This is like if Homer Simpson showed up at your doorstep.
During the credits, you get a really cute CG of Sayanji eating. Hyoko.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking big. I'm the big Hyoko fan. I appreciated that. It is so fucked up that she got stacked. I don't like that. I don't like that. Take MILF Hyoko back. She's not even like MILF Hyoko. I guess she's MILF coded. It's fine.
Yeah.
To be fair, everyone else in the cast is also traumatized by that knowledge, being like, what? No, she can't look like that now. No.
It's not funny when she's mean if she's like big. It's only funny if you could like pick her up and throw her. If Hyoko calls you mean names, you can just put her in timeout. There's really which is something that I'm really surprised that nobody in Danganronpa 2 realized until after she died,
right?
If they realized it at all. Like, she's like 3 foot nothing. You could put her in a backpack.
She becomes Kazooie.
It's funny because they immediately know to tie up Komaeda after the first chapter, but
they could tie up everybody who does anything that they don't like. They honestly, it really should have just been at the end of chapter at the end by the like beginning of chapter 2. It was just Chiaki and Hajime and everybody was just tied up, and it was just the two of them, and like, okay. I don't know how we're going to make this work, but you got to tie me up at the same time I tie you up.
Just a fucking...
And then we're all fine.
Yeah.
Monokuma will feed us. He can't let us die.
Yeah. So, before we get into our final thoughts about the game, we have an email to read. Ooh. Yes, I'm reloading it real quick.
Final thoughts about the game. We're only like 47 minutes in. We got to get another 3 hours and 15 minutes into this episode.
Uh-huh.
If we're gonna give everybody the bang for their buck that Danganronpa 2 got us.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about fucking mini games.
Right. Oh, like real quick. These mini games are just they're bad. They're yeah. So bad.
I watched Kiri try. I mean, granted, I also tried and failed at the fucking snowboarding, the logic dive. I think it's, I don't care what it is called actually.
It's called logic dive. That yeah, right.
The last attempt, the fucking thing that they make you do, they make you, like, it's not, it isn't unreasonably hard, I think. But it is insanely stupid, and if you are like one pixel off, you have to do the whole thing over again.
Yeah, you just clip through the
I'm
floor.
I'm reasonably sure that's a war crime. anyway, Kiri and I both like I think I reasonably fucking watched Kiri like try and fail at that for like 20 minutes.
It wasn't 20 minutes, but it was like it was an unreasonable.
It was emotionally 20 minutes to me.
Yeah, there was. You know what? I will say like. The mini games.
I definitely tried and failed at it for 20 minutes. For 20 actual minutes, though.
Yeah, just like when you got to do the mini game where you just got to mash everything and just say "fuck this mini game" when you're telling Junko to shut up. Like,
oh yeah, I do love that you can just fever time and it lasts long enough to you just not engage with the mechanics. Fuck that.
Mm.
It definitely. You know what? I think being able to do that actually worked a lot did a lot of like legwork for the text of being like, okay, you're self-actualized now. You can just tell her to fuck off. You don't have to listen to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, we got an email. If you want to send us an email, send it to despaircast@gmail.com. That's where you send the emails.
Yeah.
We have
love letters, criticism, compliments. Yeah. Love letters again, mm-hmm. Whatever you want.
Your fanfic?
I love love
whatever.
Letters. Send me fanfiction.
Yeah.
Doesn't even have to be Danganronpa. I'll read it. I'll critique it on the cast.
Yeah. We'll just pivot to, like, we're just people's beta readers now.
Yeah. No, let's go.
Mm.
Let's go.
Anyway, this is from Joaquin. Thank you very much for sending in your email. Hello, y'all. One of my favorite things in storytelling is when a story has a meta aspect to it that actually works textually as well as metatextually, and because of that, I love the ending of Danganronpa 2. The end reveal of everything being a game simulation works so well for me, especially with how weird, with its weird fourth wall break jokes and references to the first game are recontextualized to be Junko trying to break the spirits of the remaining cast of the first game, watching everything unfold. How do you feel about the game getting so meta about games and itself? And for those who have played V3, do you feel like this extra thematic underpinning being added to the series here strengthens the series narrative or undermines it? Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a clever touch where when you initially go into the fake Hope's Peak and Monokuma's like, okay, so for the people in this room, it may not be nostalgic, but I'm sure it's nostalgic for someone. And you initially think, oh, yeah, they're just nodding to the player there. But no, he's talking specifically about Naegi there. Like, he's specifically setting up the Hope Speak situation to taunt Naegi.
I think...
Yeah, this bit was really good.
Yeah.
I think...
Go ahead.
I think a lot of things. Kiri... You think first, though.
Okay. I guess it's that, for me, it was a little hit or miss, because there were just a few too many times in which, like, there was two times that come to mind when it comes to, like, the meta tech stuff, like, that was kind of annoying when Kazuichi said, it's like, oh, are my words being displayed on a screen? That's so stupid. And I was like, okay, come on. But when Monokuma nearly mentions Dragon Quest, and Kazuichi says, no, don't say it, like, I felt that worked. I think that the idea is strong. I think it's like, I think my only complaint is just this chapter was really, really long and they could have cut down a few things. But I like the idea conceptually that, you know, it's Junko and Monokuma trying to, like, reach out to the cast of the first game and, you know, break their spirits. Like, I think that's kind of interesting, like, conceptually.
Yeah, they really are, like, rubbing their faces in it. Especially because, like, it is the first, I mean, especially because it's their fault that, like, that our group in
the Remnant, the Remnants, like, of Despair,
the Remnants of Despair. I forgot what to actually call them, but the Remnants are actually just trapped in this game world.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because it's the Hope's Peak folks who, or not Hope's, the Future Foundation who did that and essentially allowed through vulnerability, just simply not being good enough at what they did, to let Junko in.
Mm.
That being the case, like, her rubbing that in was very good.
Yeah.
I actually tend not to like self-referential shit. Like, that tends to drive me up the fucking wall. But I think frankly it worked. They overextended a little bit, but knowing that it was specifically, like, not only is it in a game for you, it's in a game in its own text, that alleviates a lot of the pressure, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like, it takes the it no longer makes the jokes load bearing. It's kind of like, oh, okay, you know, even if the joke doesn't land, the sentiment that, like, is there around it and the greater context to it that is afforded by, you know, the premise,
mm-hmm,
makes it work nonetheless, even if it doesn't land. So I like that bit a lot too.
Yeah, the only bits that don't land for me so much are, like, if you go throughout the fake virtual Hope's Peak here and examine some of the objects, for whatever reason, Hajime just starts talking about, when you're getting to the archery range, if you click on the archery range, he's like, if the developers had a bit more time here, they probably could have added a minigame. Wait, what am I saying?
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Oh, I didn't do any of that.
Yeah, but because I've played V3, I think the metatextual stuff in V3 works a little better, in my opinion. But I think we'll get to that when we cover V3. Like, they do some things in V3 that are, like, I particularly enjoyed. But I think it's one of those things where everybody played Metal Gear 2 and is trying to, like, do something with that. And it can be hit or miss. But I think Danganronpa, like, I think it, I would give it a B, you know? I would give it a B in terms of, like, it's...
Yeah, B sounds fair.
Yeah. Like, it's... Like,
I might give it a wasp. I'd say a B is a good score for it, though.
Right.
It doesn't land all the time, and I wouldn't even say it lands most of the time, but, like, the parts that matter, it lands, and it lands them well enough to make up for all the times where it doesn't land.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danganronpa really isn't about, like, the whole text. It's about those big moments where things come together, and when things come together, they came together pretty fucking all right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And I think
just overall, but also very specifically with these approaches.
Yeah. Yeah, overall, I felt like I'm really happy that we went through Super Danganronpa 2. I still like the game. I still think it's worth playing. I think now on initial revisit, like, in my memory, I had thought of Danganronpa 2 as better than Danganronpa 1, but I think I'm starting to get a slight edge to Danganronpa 1. But they're still both really good, you know, games. Like, we're doing this podcast for a reason, because I still really enjoy these games. And two, I think... 2 has, like, big, big swings, so that means its misses are big misses, but when it hits, it knocks it out of the park. You know? Jen, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, for me, it's one of the situations where I came into this remembering how Danganronpa 2 was one of my favorite games ever, and, like, that really hasn't changed upon replaying it. Like, both Jackie and Kyrie have done a good job of pointing out the various flaws that it runs into, but I just love this cast so damn much. Like, even some of the members that are kind of eh sometimes, like, now I'm blanking on, now just thinking of him as Shitman because Nekomaru. Jackie just always called Nekomaru Shitman.
That is his bit.
Was the first thing you said about him when we
You literally introduced him to me as Shitman and I immediately went, okay, this is Shitman.
Yeah, like even
but Nekomaru's
hold on, I think Jed has a point she wants to
just
make.
Like even okay, him, sorry. Like there's something about having spent all of this time with these characters, like that's the thing that works so well with me with this particular formula. You just get to know them very well and spend a lot of time in their space, and you just kind of come to love them as, like, these feel like real... You can basically feel a lot of empathy for them and what they're going through and just enjoy their presence. So just getting to hang out with them again was pretty positive enough, but also, like, Case 2 and... Cases 4 and 5 in this game are some of the strongest, the end of Case 4.
End of Case 4, yeah.
Yeah. But Case 2 and Case 5 specifically are some of the best detective moments in video games I've seen. So I appreciated going through all those again.
I thought the cast for Danganronpa 2 was, barring a few exceptions, way weaker. Not... through fault of the actual character pitch, because I feel like the characters themselves taken into their entirety probably more compelling than initially presented, but the game does not go out of its way to illustrate them as more than one dimensional. A lot of it is tucked away behind optional scenes and, you know, interactions that you may not make the decision to go for because the initial pitch for the character sucks ass. Like, what kind of just utter sociopath, unprompted, is going to hang out with Nekomaru? Nobody. Nobody sees Nekomaru go, I have to shit, and goes, this is a guy I want to see. This is a diamond in the rough. I want to see more about this guy, and I want to explore it. I want to explore the entirety. I want the vast depths of his soul laid bare to me. Nobody's gonna fucking do that at all. So it bumps into this problem where, like, even Hiyoko, like, I hated Hiyoko. Yeah. And by the time that I stopped hating Hiyoko, she was dead. Like, she was a corpse and you could no longer hang out with her. So, like, it pitches these characters as, like, here's a little girl who's just an asshole. And it's like, okay, well, she, and then it's like, okay, well, if you go into... If you hit up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, start, and do the Macarena on the start menu, you'll find out that she has anxiety about, like, you know, the expectations placed upon her, and that she bullies other people as a coping mechanism, and that she has, like, very low self-worth and blah, blah, blah. And you'll never see that, because why would you do that?
I think
it makes learning more about these characters as unappealing as possible because it pitches them as, like, extremely low extremely low value ways. It lowballs them. And in Danganronpa 1, it didn't really do that. Like, and the cast felt tighter. Like, things just felt more together for the first game. And the second game kind of felt, this game kind of felt like presumptuous almost. Like, oh, they played the first game, so of course they're going to want to hang out with all the characters.
There was one thing you just reminded me a little bit of one thing that was kind of cool near the ending was how cohesive the group, like, started to feel. I mean, granted, this is, like, 11th hour stuff, but it was kind of cool to see the group, you know, actually working together.
Yeah, it was 11:59:99 on the clock, and you actually did feel group cohesion, which is the weird thing. Like, that's the thing, is that, like, I 100% agree, Kiri, at the very end, it felt like these characters are kind of all together now. They're all kind of, like, they have a rapport.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good.
Yeah.
It was good. I liked that shit.
I think I genuinely...
Where was this 5 chapters ago?
I genuinely think you're really going to enjoy, like, V3, because...
I hope so.
Because I think that...
I mean, this isn't to say I didn't like Danganronpa 2. Sure. I just don't think it's a... I just think, there are specific characters I like more than I like than... Like, I'm going to be honest, and I like Hyoko more than I think more than just about anyone who wasn't Makoto or Kyoko, or anybody who wasn't named Kyoko Kirigiri in Danganronpa 1. I think Hyoko and Pekko and Fuyuhiko take it over anyone who isn't Kyoko. Sorry, Aoi, but you're like a solid 5th place, maybe. Find something other than donuts and swimming and
damn, being
afraid, and yeah,
damn, shots fired.
Swimming, cringe.
So
no, but I think the cast that actually, like, I don't know, the cast is better when you give them a shot, but it makes it hard. But Danganronpa 2 does not want you to give them a shot.
Yeah. I still have a strong affection for, like, several of the cast members of Danganronpa 2. I think once you get past their initial roughness, you do get a lot of depth. It is unfortunate that a lot of their depth is contained inside stuff, inside interactions.
I really think that, like, Danganronpa 2, I think the free time stuff is okay, but Danganronpa 2 would have been way better if it cut free time in half, but just made a lot of these moments just, like, you see this character in the overworld, or, you know, you spend, like, 5 minutes with this character, and you immediately, like, just progress to one of their free time scenes.
Yeah.
Like, if you interact enough, or if you, you know, if you can come across them in the overworld and spend time with them then, and then you'll just kind of progress that relationship naturally, as opposed to being limited to, like, very specifically 3 a day. You can't really know everybody, and you're probably not going to pick the characters that don't immediately appeal to you,
mm-hmm.
which is the thing. Like, I literally was forgetting, I literally am still forgetting the pink-haired pervert guy's name.
Kazuichi.
I am constantly forgetting his name. He is nothing to me. You could shoot him in the head and I won't flinch.
Wow. Shots fired, literally.
He is nothing to me. And that throws me off pretty bad, because it's like...
He was on the final 5.
You two like him. You two like him. He's final 5.
I liked him initially, but then it was like, you know, I
oh, okay. Never mind. Let's just shoot him in the head. Don't worry about it.
Like, my favorite. It's
Kiri, if you got to put gun sound effects in here now.
Well, I did it with my mouth.
Got to get him execution style. but okay, so.
More
so,
work
better,
for me.
Better. I love putting work on Kiri's shoulders. Gundam, for instance. I didn't really see the appeal in Gundam, but he's like, you two are crazy about him. I didn't really see the appeal in Gundam until, like, we got the scene after he died, and we find out that he challenged Nekomaru, not really because he wanted to get out, but because he wanted to assure that, like, everybody was able to escape the fun room somehow.
Mm.
And if somebody dies, they get out. So, like, he was okay with dying for everybody else's sake.
Yeah, I mean,
even if he, like, you know, was kind of playing along with the trial.
I think it's just one of those things where when a character has these, like, strong moments, I do, like, I just like them. And I think also the vocal performance of Gundam, like, also warmed me up to him, which, I mean, I think we've sung the praises of the vocal performances for this game quite a bit. But, you know, one last time, I think the vocal performances are really good in this game. I think they help sell characters that may not necessarily... They help elevate the writing in a lot of ways, because these voice actors are extremely talented at what they do. I don't know. It's... I guess it's just... For me, like, that moment with Gundam at the end, like, it recontextualized him as a different character, and I was like, oh, this is cool, and I like this. And I think that... I grew to like this cast. Yeah. I don't know. Let's see. I think, is there any, do we have any other thoughts? Anything we want to bring up or get out there about the
Super Mega World? There are nothing but thoughts in this Discord.
Excuse me? I'm sorry, you broke up for a little bit.
This Discord is full of thoughts.
Okay, thank you. I'll be sure to.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh. More labor for me.
So... Yeah. So I, thoughts aside, I think, I don't know if I should have said, I don't know if I, like, said this, but, I don't know if I said this last chapter, but I think Komaeda being the good guy should have been seated, like, way earlier in the text.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause we find, cause I think that's the thing is, like, finding out that he wanted to actually kill all of them, but because he had a good reason for it, like, that's a good reveal, but it feels like it comes unnecessarily late. Like, it doesn't feel suspenseful so much as it feels tardy, you know? Like, this is something that, like, oh, if we knew this earlier, that could have been a really cool moment. Like, you could have revealed, or, like, theoretically, you could reveal that the members of the main cast at the trial were members of Ultimate Despair, or they were the remnants of Despair. You could have revealed that on Komaeda's death.
That would have been really cool.
That would have been a good reveal. That would have executed on it perfectly, and it would have not only been like, okay, not only was Komaeda right, what the fuck are we gonna do? And then you end the chapter, and then chapter 6 is based on that knowledge. Now we're working from there. Which makes it feel very weird, because they had, like, kind of, because again, perfect spot to do it. You could have had Komaeda literally announce that you are all members of Ultimate Despair, and that, like, you are all objectively bad people, and I needed to get rid of you. And if you are seeing this and you aren't the traitor, I have failed and the world is worse for it, and I beg you for mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Or some shit, you know? And then the cast can mull on that as they segue into the finale. And then I think in this rewrite, you wouldn't even need to have the main, the Trigger Happy Havoc cast. Yes, I'm still on that. I'm sorry. but I think that, like, I think that effectively excising characters and keeping things in the room is a skill. And I think it's something that I would have liked to have read the script of an alternate take of Danganronpa 2 that did this.
Mm-hmm. Jen, you have a thought?
I was going to say, even though Komaeda's actions were just in his own head, it's a situation where, like, this chapter kind of glazes past it, but he was also a member of the Remnants of Despair. Like, that scene in the in chapter zero, he's wearing Junko's severed hand as he's riding in the boat. And
I mean, yes, but he also very explicitly hates her. Yeah. Like, he literally tells you when you're in the boat ride, he's like, okay, this is the hand of my sworn enemy.
Yeah.
I hold this on me because I hate her so much. I want to look at this hand if you can get me and make myself mad. I have this hand pinned to my arm because I'm not pissed off enough. I need every so often I just take off my big foam finger and I go, ah.
Yeah.
Junko, I'm going to get ya.
The complicated thing about Komaeda that they don't explain super well in this game and that they get into later is that his specific membership within the Remnants of Despair is the way that he got inducted into it is more or less a situation where he thinks that he'll be able to like destroy it from the inside while very much still being under the control of Junko and the other members. Yeah, he wants to subvert that. So,
well, that's made apparent by the actual like text of the game, but like again, like he is, or even if he wasn't, like the idea of him being like he is a member of this group who has, if nothing else, come to his senses and understands that like I and everybody in this room was a monster in life, and I can't let us go back to living, because if I do, the world will be a worse place. And it's already pretty fucking bad.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So again, like that knowledge should have been imparted on the cast in the beginning of the chapter, and it should have been left to stew, let marinate a bit. We would have had a delicious little batch of despair.
Yeah, it was like it's the seeding problem that I mentioned. Like,
yeah,
Danganronpa 2 has really good ideas. It's just sometimes they don't seed them properly.
I will say the two shots of him in the boat where it's sort of far away and then it's close up and he has the bandaged hand. It's very effective at like bringing in the horror elements that Danganronpa doesn't always play into, but sometimes it does, and it is unnerving. Just seeing him stare at you off in the distance from the other side and then getting close in is like, ugh, this is uncomfortable.
Yeah, whenever you're in a room with Komaeda, it's uncomfortable.
Yeah, I was gonna say Komaeda just is a very discomforting little guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a freaky little pervert, and I hate him. Get out of here! I'm gonna chase him out with a broom. I'm sick of this guy.
Like,
you see, Koma, I didn't initially realize it was Junko's hand at first. I'm like, oh, Komaeda, you did your nails.
Oh, that's good.
Fashionable today, aren't we?
Yeah. Good for you. Good for you.
Komaeda didn't even suture Junko's hand onto his arm. He just fucking painted his nails.
And then he was like,
he's just like, I'm gonna make myself fashionable to make myself mad, to remind myself that how much I hate Junko and how mad I am. Anyway, check out this drip. Check the drip, Hajime.
It is pretty fun when, I don't know, whenever Jen cosplays as Nagito, she tends to, like, paint her nails.
So. Yeah, I just paint the nails for that specific hand and then use some sort of marker or other sort of makeup to make it look like it's been stitched on. But yeah, unfortunately, you're gonna be seeing a lot more of Komaeda as this goes on.
Well, again, it's a prequel context. Let's bring it out right here. The next thing we are going to cover is Danganronpa 3, the anime. What, Jen? What?
That's not the next
thing. I'm going to cover my eyes first so I don't see any more Komaeda.
That's not the next thing we're covering here.
Okay, all right.
The next thing we're covering here is Ultra Despair Girls.
For one episode.
Oh, fuck yes.
So, okay.
I am literally going to watch a playthrough of Ultra Despair Girls just so I could join in on this.
Yes!
Okay. Alright.
Ultra Despair Girls is like, from what I gather, when you two talk about it, it is by and away just utter dog ass.
We're gonna get into it a whole lot more during that episode, but yeah, it's It's far and away the worst Danganronpa media out there. It has a few qualities that are like, oh, that was kind of neat. But overall, it is a weird mistake.
Instead of playing Ultra Despair Girls, you should just watch the Fingers in His Ass video for like 24 hours.
Yeah. So here's what I was thinking.
It's also Fingers in His Ass is canon, right?
Like, yeah, of course. I mean,
okay, good. I just need to be sure.
Yeah, the person who took the photos of the most recent Kameida figure coming out staged it in the Fingers in His Ass hallway.
Yeah. So
that's a real hallway. It's not, but like, that's a real hallway. They also did not know about that. I need to be clear. They did not know that that was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it even funnier, in fact, right. Because Komaeda just naturally manifests in the Fingers. And like, if you see Komaeda, he is in the process of manifesting the Fingers in His Ass hallway around him.
Yeah, that's his stand.
Yeah, his stand is finger fuckung.
So here's what I'm thinking. The next episode we cover, we will talk about Ultra Despair Girls. I was also thinking I could look into some of the extracurricular material of Danganronpa. We could just kind of talk about that. And then that will be the lead to talking about Danganronpa 3, the anime. And we'll have more details when we do the episode on UDG. When we get there. But, yeah, so...
I could also beat the fuck out of my shins with a hammer, you know?
You could. It's like, do I play UDG?
Basically the same as UDG.
Uh-huh.
I know nothing about this game and I'm ragging on it. I think I'm priming myself to go into this with negative emotions. What if I go into UDG and it turns out to be, like, my favorite part of the Danganronpa series?
That is highly unlikely.
Highly, highly unlikely.
Oh, no. Oh, no. This is definitely gonna happen, isn't it? I'm gonna be like, wow, this is, like, I don't know where they went on to that, like, lecture on Kantian philosophy, but it was extremely good. I don't know why, how it went, how it did that.
This is one of the rare cases where I'm gonna be like, hey, if folks listening to this, there's probably a good chance if you're a Danganronpa fan, you've already played through it, but if you're just listening to this so you can hear people talk about the series, you do not need to complete the game for homework.
No, you do not. You are free from homework for the next episode. We are going to talk about UDG.
I do think it's long enough that it does take like a full episode to discuss it, just because there's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack.
There is a lot to fucking unpack in UDG. Oh god,
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I cannot tell you. First and foremost, I'm not actually going to be playing this game. I'm just going to be watching like a playthrough in double speed. But like, I'm so excited for just this utter shit show. It's going to be either. That's the thing, though. I don't know. Is it going to be an utter shit show? Or is it going to be solid gold? There's no way of knowing.
There is a way of knowing. It's I guess I'm going to have to watch an LP of UDG as well.
Have you not seen it before?
I've seen episode. Like, I never completed it, but I did watch. Yeah, okay, here's the thing. So, back in season one, I kept mentioning that I bought a Vita to play Danganronpa. And I bought...
Oh, no.
I bought UDG, because originally, UDG was originally a Vita game. And I swear to God, every time I tried playing it, it would delete my save. It was
best game ever made.
Like, listen, my Vita was
first level so nice they made you play it 10,000 times.
My Vita was trying to protect me.
Yeah.
That Vita would take a bullet for you.
Yeah.
We'll get into that when we get into that, I guess.
Yeah, we will. We've gone real long on this episode, I'll tell you that much.
It's the finale.
Still
the
not 4 hours. Game. We got like, let's see, let me check the clock on this bad boy. We got about 2.5 hours to kill.
Did anyone else bring their copy of Strategico?
What?
Nothing. It's a bad joke.
Oh, okay.
I was just gonna say something. Wouldn't bring the board game.
Oh, we're playing Stratego? Let's go. Let's fucking go.
Oh my god.
Rest of this episode, I could run Blades in the Dark if you want.
Alright.
Alright, roll up a character. Let's go.
Okay. Alright, let's do it.
I've been meaning to run Merkborg. Let's do that instead. Merkborg is just like, what if Danganronpa was not Danganronpa at all?
Well, it has nothing to do with it.
And... what if Danganronpa was the best Doom Metal RPG ever put to pen?
Right. So, alright. Follow us on Twitter at YouDespairCast. Like you said, we crossed 200 followers. It's super fucking hype. Thank you for coming along the ride with us. Pretty soon, by the time this comes out, I realize that there are some issues with the RSS feed. I will fix that. I will get on that. It'll be great. So follow us for updates. If you want to email the show, it's despaircast@gmail.com. Questions, comments, fanfic, whatever the fuck you want to send us, we'll read it on the air.
You could send me a cool hat.
Yeah. Yeah. Just email Jackie a hat. A JPEG of a hat.
Email me a cool... Yeah, give me some JPEGs.
Yeah.
Send me your favorite JPEGs.
Yeah.
That's your homework, actually. No, you don't have to play or watch anything or read anything or taste anything, but you do have to send me your favorite JPEG.
Mm-hmm.
Very specifically a JPEG. If you send me a ping, you're blocked.
Yep.
I will know. I know my file extensions. I look at them. I read them with my eyes, and I go... that's not a JPEG.
Mm-hmm.
And if you send me a JPEG without the E, if it did a little JPG, you're on thin fucking ice, Buster.
And you can follow me on Twitter at KyrieAPage. That's where I repost stuff I find on the internet. And that's where you can find me and what I do. Jen, where can people find you on the internet? You might want to move the chair in a little bit. You kind of slid away.
Yeah, Jen, move your chair.
Okay. You can find me at JBU3 on Twitter. Most of my stuff is on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. You have articles from me, podcasts, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And also... I do a video game storytelling podcast, Novel Not New, which you can find at readinggames.online. The last thing we played was Suzerain, and the next thing we'll be playing is a Vampire the Masquerade text adventure called Night Road.
Ooh, that's Inez was telling me about that one. It's very good.
That seems from what I hear. That seems really cool. Definitely check that out. And Jackie, do you want to plug anything? Something into a socket.
You know what? It's a little hot in here, a little stagnant. I'm gonna plug my fan in.
Okay.
But you can find my Twitter. It's Chairman Mao at twitter.com, of course. That's not how Twitters are formatted. It's twitter.com/Chairman Mao. That's exactly as it sounds, with a U at the end, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Not gonna explain myself to you.
Yeah.
You
also have
This is the first time I've plugged social media in like a billion trillion years.
Yeah. And also you already talked about this, but you are streaming to Twitch.
I am streaming to Twitch. I think when we're doing V3, I'm gonna be streaming that to Twitch, doing playthroughs. I'll probably if it's cool with everyone else, I'll probably post that on the Despaircast official account, maybe?
Yeah.
For when I'm planning on doing it. I don't really time my streams out now because I'm largely just getting used to doing stuff with a potential audience.
We'll work it out.
We'll work things out. We'll figure stuff out. Uh-huh. It'll be a grand old time.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. This has been, I gotta say, I just reflecting on this, I know it's not the end, we still got a lot of stuff to go through, but I am glad that we got through Super Danganronpa 2. I'm glad that we've replayed these games and that we're kind of halfway through this little project of ours. So thank you everybody for listening, sharing, tweeting at us. Like, it's been great, and I really appreciate it. And it's going to be great. We're going to have some fun stuff. I have, I got some fun activities planned for y'all. So, yeah, it's going to be good. So I've been, anything else? Last call for anything? No? Okay, great.
Yeah.
I've been Kyrie.
I've been Jennifer.
I've been Jackie.
Class dismissed.
Yeah. See ya, fuckers.
Wow.
What are we doing?
We're doing it live.